Which one is that?
Been waiting for you.
We have four here.
Call Resource Committee in order. For the record, Senator Elias, Senator Cotton, Senator Frank, Senator Zaroff, Senator Jones are present. Today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 114, Marine Park Units, and Senate Bill 154, Environmental Damage Liability. First on the agenda will be Senate Bill 114. Senator Duncan?
Mr. Chairman, we're not on teleconference for this, are we?
Not this one. 154 will be on teleconference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give some very brief testimony on Senate Bill 114 and then turn it over to anyone else who might want to testify or to any questions you have. And I'm sure there are those who here who could help me answer questions if they are asked. I appreciate the fact that you are scheduling or have scheduled Senate Bill 114 for a hearing. It does establish additional marine park sites in the Juneau area, and I think the map against the wall over there indicates where those sites are. The following islands have been selected by the Alaska Department of Natural Resources specifically for addition to our marine park system. Additional acreage on Shelter Island. A portion of Shelter Island is already designated as a marine park. Coghlan, Portland, Lincoln, Benjamin, Ralston. I don't know if I need to go through all these names or not. Gall, North Aran, Sentinel, Bird, Cohen, Little Soyuz, Battleship, and Indian Islands are the others that have been selected. Currently, six locations in Juneau have marine park status, including Taku Harbor, Oliver's Inlet, Thunder Bay, Hand Trollers, and Culver's Cove on Shutter Island, St. James Bay, and Sullivan Island. The Juneau Area Parks Advisory Board brought this to my attention. They feel it is important to designate these islands as marine parks to ensure that they are managed for the purposes outlined by the state when it selected these areas under the terms of the Statehood Act. As the note or the memo from the Department of Natural Resources indicate, these are selections under 6A of the Statehood Act for community expansion and recreation area. This addition will enhance development of the International Marine Park Network that was mentioned or in the resolution that we passed last year, Consent and Concurrent Resolution Number 42, which I sponsored, and we passed Senate 17-0, in fact. Senate Concurrent Resolution 42 also received unanimous approval, passed the House also, not quite unanimously. But it would enhance development of the International Marine Park Network that was mentioned in that resolution. Marine parks provide suitable anchorage with shelter from wind and waves for small boats. The network begins with Washington State's 55 marine parks, includes 25 Canadian parks from Port Hardy on Vancouver Island to Prince Rupert, and Alaskan parks on the Inside Passage from Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, Sitka, and Haines. There has been some concern expressed to my office by some individuals that existing hunting and commercial fishing uses of these sites would be prohibited because of the designation as marine parks. However, according to the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, hunting, sport, and commercial fishing and trapping are expressly allowed, would be allowed, in Alaska's marine parks. I think there's a fiscal note in your packet, Mr. Chairman, from the Division or Department of Natural Resources indicating no fiscal impact. Help in managing the new marine park sites will be sought from local volunteers. That's basically my testimony, and there's others here who can give more specifics and details if that's needed.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Lassen.
Senator Duncan, I think we talked about this earlier, but DNR has no objections. However, if we delay the implementation of the act or not have them do it immediately, do it when at a lower priority so they can address the state lands that they're working on now. Is that what this letter says? In fact, that
what letter says?
DNR.
It says, as I read it, it says they have no objection to designation of these islands as state marine park. They are required to develop a management plan within 5 years after the designation. But as I read the bottom line, they have no objection, unless you read something I don't.
No, what I'm saying is that this will not take priority over what they're doing now as it relates to selecting state lands under we have 2 more years to go, 3 years to go. I read this letter saying that they have no problem. There's a zero physical note because they will be allowed to delay the preparation of that plan. Is that the understanding?
Well, you'd have to ask them that, but my understanding is they have 5 years to do it right, so, you know, they wouldn't be required to do a management plan next year or this summer or whatever. It would be my understanding that they have that flexibility to do it within the next 5 years. Not if I'm answering your question, but perhaps they can speak to it better than I can.
Any questions? Senator Duncan, are there any areas here added beyond what the DNR had originally requested from the Forest Service? Four state parks, four marine parks?
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. Unless DNR has some other information. We do have some maps. Do we have, Roxanne, do you have some smaller maps that people can look at, or do you just have one copy?
Well, I just see what Funner Bay and those are just some islands there at Funner Bay and down here toward Tai.
As far as I know, it's nothing additional.
That's not additional.
No, those are existing marine parks. They did wish to expand the Funner Bay Marine Park, but we didn't include it in our legislation.
I see. Okay.
Thank you. May I just bring you for a little while?
Well, okay.
Oh, of course, not saying anything. I just want to watch Senator Zara. All right.
Senator Zara.
Mr. Chairman, as the sponsor knows there, that I'm very much concerned about the traditional uses continuing. And I know that you've stated that the types of loot uses that would be allowed. And it seems to me there's a lot clearer in the legislation there, and understanding for everybody that you have your traditional and cultural whatever uses continue. My experience has been in the past where we've been burnt in designating land there for special use, that all of a sudden somebody comes along, there are regulations change or whatever, and then all of a sudden you find that you can't go clam digging or berry picking or hunting or whatever because it's got a new land designation. And been consistent with my concerns in the past. We've tried to insert, and I think I've been successful in many cases, that the traditional uses continue. And then also, I don't know that sometimes closing land off or categorizing it off in a certain area may sound good today, but 10, 15, 20 years from now, it may not be such a good idea. And several times I've tried and not been successful, but putting a sunset clause on a number of these types of legislation so that we come back and visit that again in another 10, 15 years and see if this is actually the route there that we wanted to go. Those are just my comments.
Mr. Chairman, appreciate the comments. I was just looking at the statutes, and I don't know if you have in your folder or not, that does talk about management marine parks, and I guess we don't mention, I just read it real quickly, maybe someone from DNR can better clarify this, but I don't see where we mention traditional, whatever your term was, cultural or whatever, you mentioned here, although I'm assuming it's, you know, I don't think it's ever been a problem, but I know that I have been told, but maybe we can have DNR speak to that, but that would be, I would guess, not amendment to this bill, because this bill is just designating additional areas. It does not include the authorized enabling statutes for marine park management, et cetera, but maybe someone from wherever it went. Oh, maybe, what's his name back there?
Neil?
Neil.
Yeah. He's still with us?
Neil, you want to come up now?
Okay. Senator Scott?
Yeah, I think I've got the statute Jim referring to there, and I think it's pretty clear that the commissioner may not restrict the exercise of hunting, fishing, trapping permitted under law or under a regulation of the Board of Fish or the Board of Game within a marine park. May not restrict the exercise of anything that's legal as far as hunting, fishing, and trapping.
Mr. Chairman, does that also include berry picking, clam digging, and all that, too?
There's anything about berry picking, hunting, fishing, and trapping.
I think
clam is good under fishing, but berries definitely not.
Had a sport fishing license to big clams in the lab already.
Unless you live in Korea.
Neil?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer just a brief statement.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, I'm Neil Johansson, Director of State Parks, Department of Natural Resources. I'd like to offer just a brief statement on Senate Bill 114. The enabling statute that created the system of marine parks in Alaska was passed into law by the 1983 legislature. The essential intention of the legislature was to create a series of small parks stretching up through the Alaska coastline that were an easy boating distance apart, bays, beaches, bights, mouths of rivers, etc., that would be reserved for recreation purposes. Section 6A of the Statehood Act allows, as you know, the state to select up to 400,000 acres of national forest land. These areas were identified and selected for the purposes of recreation. Probably fewer than 20% of the total selection of national forest estate would be for the purposes of recreation. And these are areas adjacent to Juneau in which there has been local interest in establishing or adding these to the marine park system. The original 1983 statute, I think, was relatively clear that although these areas are reserved for recreation, the intention was that they would be parks with kind of a small P, that fish and wildlife resources would continue to be maintained and managed by the Department of Fish and Game, that they would be created to maintain the natural, cultural, and scenic values, and to provide for, promote, and support recreation and tourism in the state. I guess, in the interest of being brief, I would also point out that they also provide for access to private properties, mining claims, or other purposes, and also for mariculture, aquaculture type sites if agreed to by other agencies. The largest salmon hatchery in the world is on a marine park in Prince William Sound. Maybe I could just be brief and stop there, and I'm willing to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, that you or the committee might have.
All right. Cotton?
Section 6A of the Statehood Act allows Alaska to select 400,000 acres, which can be selected for community expansion and recreation areas. Now, we've selected these areas already.
These areas haven't, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, these areas have been selected.
Were they selected for marine parks, or were they selected under the general provisions of 6A that say you can use them for community expansion or for recreation? Or were they specifically selected with that designation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, they were selected for the purposes of recreation.
So how does that work? Do we now have title to this property?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't. Senator Cotton, we do not own have title here.
Are they in TA status or status?
Only selected.
Senator Howe.
What does the federal government do with them if we don't select them under our 400,000 acres?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Halford, the Tongass National Forest, of course, is managed for multiple use purposes. They have a plan. There's a number of different purposes that they could be managed for. Everything from recreation to logging to... being a veteran of Forest Service, I know a little bit about Forest Service, and there's just a variety of purposes that they could manage those lands for.
I guess my question is going toward, they're in the National Forest, so we're using up part of our 400,000 acres selection for all time to create parks inside of a national forest, and it would seem that our best bet would be to encourage the national forest to make sure that the multiple uses they choose are recreation and get the same thing out of them without using up any of our land selection.
Mr. Chairman, if that's a question, the state does that a lot. I mean, we pressure from everything from timber harvest to recreation. But the 400,000 acres, the intention of the State of the Act was for community expansion or recreation for those areas such as these that are close to a community. The policy decision has been in existence that the state should exercise its control over those areas that are closer to the communities, whether it be for recreation or community expansion, and not just let the federal government do, but you know, as a state's rights measure, you know, we probably would develop more recreation opportunities than with the Forest Service, as an example, as we have in the state park system in general. You know, it's kind of a state's rights issue. These are close to the community. And I, you know, would put the history of the state park system on the table compared to what the federal government does, that we would probably more aggressively manage them for recreation purposes. These are not areas that we want to see, you know, in a preservation status.
Didn't the communities submit their request for lands in the National Forest for community expansion and recreation? I mean, didn't Juneau put in a request along with, you know, Petersburg, Wrangell, all those areas, towns are surrounded by National Forest land? It seems to me that there was a process there where they were contacted and asked for their input. Is that true?
It is, Mr. Chairman. The state, in a process that really occurred, I think about 2 years ago, ran through a whole series in the Chugach and the Tongass National Forest of local workshops, big towns, small towns, on where land should be selected and for what purposes. And, you know, it was quite a drill that went all from Cooper Landing to Ketchikan to work with the community as to where the community had interest in selecting land and for what purposes. And really, this is something that came out of that process, is where should the state select land and for what purposes.
Senator Lennon?
Well, I fail to see what the people in Cooper Landing would, why they'd be concerned in the 400,000 acres that was designated for a southeastern in the Tongass National Forest. I guess you brought up a good question that maybe you can't answer, but someone should be able to answer whether all the needs of the communities throughout southeastern Tongass National Forest have been satisfied at this point. Because I assume that this acreage is taken out of that total, somewhere else is giving up acreage. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lyson, I guess first I didn't mean to imply that Cooper Landing was released. Advising Juneau, they were mostly concerned with the local areas, just like Juneau was interested in this. And it really was, you know, having participated in part of it, kind of a balanced approach towards the two main purposes of the selections in association with the communities, and it's led to some recreation desires from what I've seen from the communities. Some 80% of the land that has been selected, TA patented, or is simply under selection at this point, was for non-recreation purposes. So the vast majority of it was not for recreation. We simply are here representing the 20% that was for recreation purposes.
I have one more question. Some of this land has been sold, hasn't it? Or I don't know how it was ever obtained by the state or whatever, what happened, but it seems to me there are some private inholdings out in this area. Was that part of the community expansion lands that we're talking about here?
Mr. Chairman, some of the land that has been selected from the Forest Service domain has been sold, not a lot. A lot of it has been transferred to local government under the Municipal Entitlement Act. The private properties on Shelter Island, and this is an educated guess, but I believe that those private properties were carved out of the National Forest years ago, when there were opportunities to do that out of the National Forest. Up until 20 years ago, there was a process by which lands could be acquired from the National Forest.
Senator Alford, the state has had disposals on Shelter Island, I'm pretty sure. Somebody here that's from the Juneau area ought
True.
To know.
I do recall that, Senator.
Senator Connor?
How many acres have been selected under 6A?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, I think the state is right up at close to the 400,000 acres.
Yeah, I was looking at your...
You know, the final process that was, you know, a result of the workshops that were held around the the communities in the National Forest a few years ago, I think took the state up right up close to the 400,000.
I'm just reading this sheet in here, and it has DNR at the top. I don't know if that follows that come from the DNR. That's where it says, the state did decide some years ago to utilize about 10% of the acreage to create state marine parks. So, yeah, I don't know what difference it really makes. I don't know who decided that it would be 10%, but apparently one administration may have done that, or somehow the legislature might have made that decision. But I'm just kind of curious about how we stand on that. How many acres are in marine parks now? How many acres have we selected under 6A?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cotton, the total land in marine parks is roughly about 30,000 acres, as I recall.
And what's the area that's included here?
Well, there's about a dozen small islands. I guess I have not done any calculations on that. You know, maybe I have a staff member here, maybe has done that, but
that includes all the water that goes in there, too.
Yes, sir. Tidelands, submerged areas.
Well, you got quite a bit of water in some of those areas. So why draw a boundary like that to take in the water? That's not part of your federal selection, is it?
No, no.
So you just extend your park boundary out into the water there. What's that for?
In most areas, it's had to do with a lot of the recreation occurs on the beach. For the submerged areas, it had to do with placing mooring floats, which we've done in places now. To control basic activities, which could be, you know, float houses, log rafts, any activities that could be viewed as either compatible or incompatible with recreation purposes.
I'm just trying to get a scale on this. How far is this from the land?
Those squares are 648.
That's a 1 inch to the mile, man.
1 inch to the mile. So. Like 3 miles offshore. I can see the tidelands. I just know you've had trouble with some of your state parks that include bodies of water and whether or not the park system gets into regulating certain activities there. And I know it's going to be different in a state park than it is in a marine park, but I just have a hard time figuring out what you're going to do 2-3 miles offshore in a marine park that you'd need to regulate. Curious about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, I think that I did not draw up the boundary. It was a result of the local state park advisory board working with community groups. And this thing really came as kind of a grassroots bill to Senator Duncan, as I understand it. But the basic intention was things like float houses, log rafts, other activities that have been, I guess, both an opportunity and a problem.
Senator Lassen?
Pursue that a little further. I assume that even though you selected water, that doesn't come off of the total 400,000 acres. That must be talking about solid land, right?
It includes.
It includes tidelands or not?
No, it does not.
Tidelands are already stated.
So what you're talking about is that you can go out as far as you want, and water doesn't make any difference as far as what's left in the selection.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, only uplands above mean high water.
And as I recall, a couple, 3 years ago, didn't we have a problem that dealt with aquaculture in some of these areas? I think the specific problem was that this DIPAC facility here was trying to put a facility in one of the marine parks just for a short period of time to imprint the fish, and they couldn't do it, or they could do it, or what happened?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lassen, indeed, I think about 3 years ago, there was a controversy it was in the Amalga Harbor area, but also in, I believe, St. James Bay was an issue. And it became a controversy with a lot of people in the community, but the permits were issued out of my office. I guess, frankly, my recollection is I never viewed it as much of a problem, but there were a lot of people who pressured us not to do it. That there had not been enough public involvement, etc., on introducing, implanting, imprinting pink smolts in the area. But I'd like to say I made short work of the controversy.
I think you did did the right thing. No question about that, but I was wondering, are we opening up?
Well, I suspect that DITAC is not interested in putting facilities out in these particular marine parks, but has this issue came to the surface since then again?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lyson, one thing that I think a lot of people missed, in the original statute, it declares, I think they chose the word aquaculture, and it said the commissioner shall issue permits for the purposes of aquaculture. I don't think it said the commissioner may. I think the word was shall.
It's a yes or no question.
Exactly. Mr. Chairman, aquaculture is compatible with the purposes of the marine park system, and the commissioner doesn't even have the discretion to say no. In my view, is you can certainly come in with some recommendations on controls, but the commissioner shall issue permits for aquaculture. And the controversy that unfolded 3 years ago here in the Juneau area, I recall reading that statute to a lot of people before the issue kind of went away. We're friends of fish, Mr. Chairman.
I would hope so. That's one of the purposes of having recreation in those areas, I assume. But I also believe that maybe Esther Island, that was the enhancement program, I believe. But I think it should also include in these areas that might be a fish ladder or something of that nature to enhance the resource is certainly compatible with what's going on there. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I think that one is coming.
Senator,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It seems to me I thought in some of the marine parks that we had passed through last year, year before, that we were concerned, I don't remember if it was around Ketchmack Bay or wherever, but we were concerned, I know this was on Shuya, that you didn't have that much expansion out into the water, particularly when you've got few commercial fishing activities taking place and you'll have your conflicting uses between recreational users and commercial fishermen, and that we then looked at the designation there, at least of limiting to the tidelands, I guess, which would take you down to low mean water or whatever it was. Is there a commercial fishing activity up in this area? Well, I don't know how they do it down here in Southeast, but I would get concerned. How about mining? Is there any mining over in there anywhere?
Mr. Chairman, we actually did a mineral assessment. There's neither mineralization or active claims that I'm aware of.
Well, they're not restricted on them under this designation anyway, are they?
Well,
they are. Mr. Chairman, on the letter from DNR dated March 6th, on the under the background section, unless I'm reading this wrong, the last paragraph, last sentence says, under this designation, mining access and activities are not restricted in lands adjacent to the parks, which means that I read this to mean that they are restricted in the parks, but anything adjacent to the parks would not be restricted. Is that?
That's unless I'm wrong. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Czar is correct.
And you did a survey on the water, or you had an assay or whatever on anything that was done out there?
Mr. Chairman, we checked land status for mining claims and also worked with the Division of Mining on mineralization, and they found no conflicts.
Chairman, there's something different about this park. It seems to me that in the past, I know in my particular district, we designated some marine parks, but it included just the area where they're going to park the boats, which is the water, and a strip of land adjacent to it, not an whole island. So isn't that what's different about this? Am I right or wrong?
Then we have Bill Garrity come up.
I mean,
Bill Garrity here?
Bill Garrity is here.
Why don't you come up? Do you have any,
Sure.
Don't be nervous, Bill.
Just... Are you a piece of shelter or are you in a state marine park?
Just want to get everybody's...
Mr. Chairman.
You know, I don't...
Senator Duncan said that Bill might have some input as far as where the lines, why the lines are drawn where they are.
Do you want me to be the answer, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Geary. I'm the regional manager for Southeast Parks. And these lines were drawn basically in cooperation with the advisory board locally that did the original work 10, 12 years ago in figuring out which islands should really be part of a marine park system around Juneau. The tourism industry in Juneau has been growing tremendously in the next, in the last decade, and they really did want to see the marine park designation as a way to improve tourism as a destination community. The boundaries offshore are strictly a way to just mark the section lines. And in most cases, the section line was used just as a matter of convenience. And I think in one place it does go out about an inch there, which would be a mile offshore. The only reason it wasn't cut off was probably because of a reef that sticks out just a little ways and would have been included had they not, included the whole section. So I suppose that in some cases, if it were mandatory to cut off a piece of a section, that could still be done. But the Forest Service in this state has no way to protect the waters or the intertidal zones. So actually, they like to see the state come in and be able to manage the whole spectrum from uplands down into submerged land. They have a problem because when a float home comes into a beautiful anchorage off of their land, they can't do anything about it. It's just the opposite in Canada, where the federal government owns the waters in the submerged lands, and the provinces own the uplands. So in their marine park system, they have the opposite problem of figuring out how to control the tidelands and submerged lands in their marine parks. So the boundaries have been drawn strictly with a matter of convenience for a survey and figuring out how to say it on the map.
Why isn't the southern portion of Shelter Island included? Anything special about that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, this area is mostly private. There would still be a small piece of state land selected above the private land, which would be available for some other purpose. So most of this is private land. It's disposed of already. It came directly out of federal ownership into private ownership.
Is there any other private land up in the area designated?
No. All of Hump Island is private, so that was not included in the park designation at all. And most of Spoon Island is private.
Senator Alford?
Yeah. Do you know what the total acreage, the land acreage is as a proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Alford, unfortunately, we never figured it out. These islands have never been surveyed. They're not logged out on any maps anywhere. So we estimate somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 acres at the max.
I was going to say, just looking at sections at 640 acres, I was going to say 6,000 acres.
But we did not lot it out because there's no way to. They've never been surveyed.
Mr. Albert?
I got a question from our packet. One of these things we've got here is a sheet that says DNR on it. This sheet here. Where'd that come from? Okay, is that a part of DNR's commentary?
Yes.
Okay, then DNR said that the priority for allocating these state land selections will be community expansion, parentheses, disposals, but the state did decide some years ago to utilize about 10% of the acreage to create state marine parks. Now, one of the questions I have is, we've selected now 400,000 acres of, or tentatively selected, about 400,000 acres of land out of the forest. I wonder if we put 30,000 plus and are proposing to put in another 6,000, so we will have put close to 10% of those with the end of this legislation into essentially parks inside of the national forest. What have we done with the other 400,000 acres as far as community expansion or any disposal or activities? I know there was disposal on Shelter Island. What else has happened?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I really have not had a lot to do with what's happened with the other lands. I do know that a fair piece of it, Senator Helfert, has been transferred to local governments. And I guess that when I say that, I'm thinking of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, which has selected a fair amount of the selected land on the Kenai. In particular, around Kenai Lake. Because I know that when the state selects its land, it also falls under the auspices, naturally, of the Municipal Selection Act. I know there have been disposals. I know that there's been quite a drill from the Division of Land and Water relative to, planning. I know it seems to me in the Ketchikan area there's been land that's been selected and transferred to the borough there.
Right.
There's been quite a bit of activity in transferring of those lands to local government. In fact, as I also recall, Senator Halpert, specifically the boroughs have been fairly major players in where the selections have occurred, because as soon as it got selected by the state and working title, it's gone to local government. I know that just from talking to Gary Gustafson that there's a lot of activity in which the state selects it, local government gets it.
Well, there, Albert, I guess my point is that apparently DNR's position paper, citing the history of what's happened, said that 90% was essentially selected from the Forest Service land for disposals, and 10% for parks. And I just wondered how we were doing, if we've got 2% in disposals and our 10% in parks, or whether the disposal side is doing as well as the park side of the use of national forest land. And I don't know. I think I'd have to go to Gustafson or somebody else from DNR to get that.
Maybe just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. Senator Helfert, I know that when the state finished the Prince William Sound Plan, which was done in part because of your pressure a couple of years ago, the Prince William Sound Plan identified a fair amount of land in the sound that was supposed to be disposed of.
They didn't do anything.
Well, I was going to say that, Mr. Chairman. I don't sell land, and I don't know what the status of that is, but Mr. Chairman, Senator Halpert, there were
you are doing far better at getting into parks than they are at getting into the private sector. Your job is to get it into parks, so I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm just pointing out their relative success as compared to yours has been dismal.
Mr. Chairman, that would be the first time that Senator Helfert wasn't trying to give me a hard time.
Okay.
And Senator Helfert has flown me around Prince William Sound and pointed out the errors of my ways in his own airplane.
Senator Lyson.
Chairman, I guess you do those boundaries because that was the easy way to do it. But reading what the purposes of the marine parks really doesn't cover what those boundaries suggest. We're talking about landing float planes. You don't land them on top of the mountains. You're dealing with small coves and bays and bights and beaches where people tend to land float planes, anchor their boats, and use kayak for camping. You don't use a kayak on top of a mountain. And these, you're clamming and fishing and camping. You might camp on top of the mountains, picnicking, and also setting up mooring buoys, a few tables and fireplaces on the beach. So the question is, why do you select the whole island to comply with this criteria for the marine park? I suspect only because it made it easier to draw the boundaries. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lassen, I'm fairly new to this particular selection. I've been here a year and a half. What I know is that the advisory board and a lot of the tourism people in this town really feel that the designation of islands of this size would assist in their adventure-based travel touring companies. They really would like to see trails, perhaps a cabin or two far away from the ocean so people could hike in. It's true that the mountaintops aren't always the best places for recreating, but on the other hand, I guess the feeling of the advisory board and other people was that it would be better to be able to show people in a brochure, this is Alaska, this is the tourism industry we have, this is where you can go next to Juneau on a one-day kayak trip. That's all I can say.
I think we're moving a little off of what the purposes are. It seems to me that I guess my concern is that
And I don't have any problem with these marine parks and areas where the population center is, and that's Juneau, obviously, in Southeast. That's not the problem. But the problem we might encounter here is that if we just take whole chunks of real estate that doesn't really relate to the purposes as outlined in this information, that we are, in fact, depriving some other area of those types of facilities which could be selected for those purposes. And there's no land left, we can't do it. What happens then?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lyson, I think that as I hear what you're saying, it really is more of a sense of balance to make sure you don't, you know, err, I guess, maybe in one direction or the other. I know that the Division of Land and Water, I've been to some of their meetings, have gone through quite an exercise of working with local communities and producing plans. I know that there's a Southeast plan. I know that there's a Prince William Sound plan that's still a relatively new one. I think your points are well taken. The only comment I have is that I think that the effort has been made in working in the communities to try to come up with balance so that, you know, a park doesn't cut off selection for other purposes. I mean, again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Lyson, I'm here, obviously, the administration doesn't have any problem with Senator Duncan's bill. Maybe the boundary should be adjusted. That's not our bill. I feel as if the primary purpose of these areas were selected were for recreation. Maybe we need to work with Senator Duncan on the boundary or something, but the effort was not being made to make sure that there was no land for local disposals or community expansion.
So, I understand that, of course, you know, we have responsibility in other parts of Southeast Alaska to, if in fact there is another place to be designated as marine parks, and I think we've showed our support for this in the past, but it seems to me we're getting down the end of the road now where there's not going to be a lot of land left to do that with. And it seems to me that we're departing from the criteria now, which is going to take up a lot of acreage, which could be used
water so that you did not get out into those commercial or sport fishing activities.
Yes, Senator Lassie. You're pushing at the beach, I'm bringing it down to the mountain. If you're a hand troller or a power troller, you're in the same thing. Where's your life
getting? Well, specifically.
Mr. Chairman.
Please, Senator Lassie.
My agenda says to talk about Thailand or Green Parks. As long as we have meals here, I'd like to know what we need. One or further, but the question I posed a few minutes ago, which I didn't have the chance to answer, was that if we created a island state park, rather than a marine park system in that same area, that would, of course, it's quite easy to manage a marine park. This doesn't cost a lot of money. Maybe a salary, I don't know. In either case, it doesn't take a lot of effort on your part. But if we created a state Islands Park, which would encompass the same areas, so what would that require you to do? What would it cost? Would it cost additional funds or maintenance or managing, or how would that work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lassen, I doubt there would be really much difference. These areas, regardless of what you'd call them, would obviously be what we call passable. We've advanced to zero fiscal note, and if it suddenly were changed to a state park versus a state marine park, that fiscal note would still remain zero. I'm not suggesting that we would put any money into the management of these units, regardless of what we call them.
Wait, Senator
Knopper. If we're going to put off the plan and not put any money into it, why don't we wait until we have the money and plan to do the plan and then make a marine park unit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Halford, it would, you know, it'd be our intention over the next 5 years or so to do a plan for those areas. As far as advancing money for cabins or whatever, I guess I could see that happening. As you know, I've been somewhat of a pro-development type of park director. I certainly talked to a lot of you about getting money to develop parks. I think that you know, there's a bunch of private cabins on Shelter Island that we would try to knock out some kind of a plan and do some facility development in places like this. My approach, whether it's right or wrong, has always been to try to balance that protection with the development of facilities for the public. I would hope that we could, in a not too long a period of time, see some basic facility development in which the public would pay fees to help maintain.
Sir Albert?
Well, then, in the next 5 years, you do envision the required expenditure to have a plan in 5 years under the statute for the park.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Helford, I think it was last year, it could have been 2 years ago, that a bill was amended on the floor of the House to require a master plan being done for the marine parks within 5 years. It's either last year or the year before. And, I am not going to ask for any money to do that, and therefore it's going to be up to some doubt whether or not we can get one done. I would think for units that are fairly close to town, such as these, Point Bridget, the Greening Home, et cetera, that we should indeed try to do some planning and work with the public, et cetera, to advance what we're going to do with those units. For those marine parks that are more distant from the communities, I would have to say I'm not so interested in trying to do a plan, but for those units that we operate that are fairly close to a lot of people, I think that some kind of a plan should be done.
Well, the statute requires a plan in 5 years, though.
Yes, sir.
And in some cases, you don't intend to follow the statute.
Mr. Chairman, I feel like I have my hands on some flypaper here.
I think you did.
You give the money, I'll do it.
You know, some Senator Hoffman, some of the units that we have that are fairly distant out in Prince William Sound, I think the chances of our doing a plan without some funding would be difficult to do that. My only point is that, I guess that we could request money under the requirement of the statute from last year or the year before to do those kind of plans. And, you know, probably we will. I mean, the legislature said do it.
Well, I guess my... You know, just right back to this bill, my point is that the statute requires a plan in 5 years, and the plan obviously requires some kind of activity on your part, and yet your fiscal note shows no increase in appropriation, not just for the first couple of years. The statement says you'll put it to the back of the period, so I would expect in the back of the five-year period there'd be at least some expenditure shown in the fiscal note, even though there wasn't any shown in the first couple of years of the fiscal note. The fiscal note says it's never going to cost anything, essentially. And the statute on fiscal notes requires any increase in appropriation or any appropriation for that purpose for the next 5 years.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Helford, I guess at this point in time, I just don't envision, when or how we would do that. I'm trying to find some way to honor the intention of the legislature with a statute change on doing a plan. And,
Well, I would think the way to do that would be to put it in the fiscal note.
Senator Helford, we find a way to do a lot of things that are not funded. I had more volunteer hours last year than I did paid staff hours in the park system. We've got very active advisory boards. We find a way to do a whole lot of things that is not paid for out of the general fund. And we probably would try to do that working with local advisory boards and others to try to achieve that. I'm not prepared to put money in that fiscal note.
The comparison to every time we get a ballot proposition, we put 2,200 in the fiscal note and we send it to the finance committee, and here we're requiring a plan and requiring an activity and we're saying it costs zero and not sending it to the finance committee. Just doesn't seem to be a valid comparison. That's my only point.
That's up to us.
Senator Lyson, you? Senator Cotton?
Just one real quick question here. Does if we didn't do this, does it risk the success of the application under 6A? Are we less likely to get the approval for the transfer of the lands?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, I think it would to some degree. The lawsuit that I referenced that went all the way to the Ninth Court of Appeals had to do with selection and the use of those lands, the reason for those selections. And the state, you know, has essentially come up with its reasons why it selects these land under the auspices of 6A of the State Ode Act. I don't think there would be a gigantic risk, Senator Cotton, but I think that it would raise some question.
Senator Alford.
With regard to the Shelter Island selections, is Shelter Island selected in one piece or is it several different federal selections?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question.
The reason I ask is that the state of Alaska has disposed of land on Shelter Island, and I wonder if that action risked the selection of the park land or what its effect on the rest of the selections was.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Halford, I don't know the answer to that question.
Are you having DNR?
Nobody signed up for DNR. Is anybody from DNR here that can answer some of these questions? Well, I know, but he's obviously he isn't there. Somebody else, sir? Guess not.
Mr. Chairman, Cindy Roberts is here, but
Well, Phil Holdsworth can tell you there's two selections on Shelter Island.
There's been a couple of questions here relating to the division of lands involved in this.
Yeah, I think that's Chairman, I think it's important that we know where we are exactly on the 400,000 acres, what priority they have on the rest of it, and if in fact if we're putting this ahead of some other priority, then I think we should know it.
Or the other thing is, if we're getting to 400,000 acres, I would hope that we save 10,000 acres that we don't select, that just sits out there as potentially available for whatever the selection period is until at least the end of the period. Now, maybe that's just 3 years left. Maybe it's the same as the rest of the selection. But to select for all time whatever is going to come out of national forests before we have to, I think is a mistake.
Do you have other selections for marine parks that need this same type of statute?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the answer to that question is yes. I'm not prepared. I just don't know, you know, the full extent of allocation of lands that are selected under 6A of the State Ode Act.
If it needs, you know, a designation by the legislature, why didn't the department come in with the whole plan laid out so we can see the whole thing and do it all at once? And this piecemeal thing, you know, we're piecemealing this to death.
That's right, the whole cake, one bite at a time.
Hey. That's right.
But I think that's good directions for them, though.
You know, it'd be something we'd, you know, we're not going to pass this out today. It's obvious we've got some problems. But I'd like to see it next time come in with, show us where
all the proposed marine parks in the next 10 years.
Plus the ones that have already been designated.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just say that seems to be somewhat inconsistent with Senator Halford's notion that we shouldn't make all those decisions now until we have to. And so I guess I'm not concerned that the department hasn't said this is our master plan for the whole state of Alaska for now until forever. And I don't think we should castigate them for not having proposed more parks.
We just want to know what they have out there ahead of us, you know, now that they know about, plus the ones we already have designated. That might give us an idea. Again, answering that question is, how does this acreage compare with what we already have out of that 10,000 acre, 40,000 acres? What's left of the 40,000 after we get through this?
Well, Neil said at one point that maybe 20% of the federal selections were going to go to marine parks, but the background paper from the Department of Natural Resources says 10%. So I think there's already a little bit of an upscaling of the expectations for marine parks, possibly.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Halford, unfortunately, the author of that paper did not talk to the director before he wrote that number down. That number came out of a 1978 publication. And the number has changed. Absolutely. The number has changed.
Senator Lyson.
Mr. Chairman, my concern, of course, I hope I support these types of bills, which does create marine parks, but not to this scale. But nevertheless, I'm concerned now that we're running out of time for land selection number two. We don't really know. I've got X amount of communities throughout the national forests in southeastern Alaska, and I want to know what's pending there. And if I unknowingly allocate a big chunk up here, and all of a sudden next year, my community say, hey, you know, we don't have any land left. What happened? I'm not going to tell them I gave it to Marine Park in this area here. I think we're going to have to look at what's left and what's available and if they have any priorities on those selections. Because we're talking about expansion of communities, too, not only, you know, recreation areas. So I think those are the types of things we should know.
It's starting to look like an appropriations bill.
I just say one of the things that was confusing in the original selections is what they called recreation included remote disposal and, I think, park activity. And the old designation of selected for community expansion or recreation, recreation included both. It included private and public recreation, did it not? That's part of the confusion.
I recall the same thing, Senator.
Okay, enough of all the rest. We have two more people here to testify on this. Philip Grave.
What are the sections? Are those already existing?
Yeah. Those are existing units. These are existing state marine parks. It is a state historical park and state recreation site.
Hey, my name is Philip Gray. I live at 4410 North Douglas Highway. I'm not particularly in favor or opposed to this bill. I guess it's okay if you make it into a state park, although there's a couple concerns I have. I would guess they're used pretty heavily, Lincoln and Shelter Island are used pretty heavily by local residents for deer hunting. So I would hate to see these ever closed to deer hunting. And I also got some problems. The Director of Parks here just mentioned something about fees. As long as the Forest Service has got it, we don't have to pay any fees. And I also don't like the idea of the public rental cabins and tent platforms and mooring things and all the rest of this stuff there because, they're going to want to charge fees to use these, and also they increase use and concentrate it in certain areas, which is going to make the hunting poorer. They also, I think, encourage vandalism and littering and all the rest of it. As the things are left as they are, you don't have to pay nothing for them. You don't have to put any state funds into them. They're real valuable to the local residents for hunting and subsistence uses, and they aren't costing anybody anything, and you don't. So I can see some benefits if the state has them. They could. They probably wouldn't be logged for one thing. Of course, I don't think they ever would be anyway, because there's too much value as tourism here. But I wouldn't like to see the development. I would certainly want to see them left open for hunting. If you were asking a question about Shelter Island, that whole southern part, DNR sold that off for lots a few years ago. And then I guess the state has got the middle part, and the Forest Service must still have the other two pieces that are on both between the private and the state. And then all the rest of them are owned by the Forest Service, as far as I know. That's about all I got to say, is that I certainly would like to see these permanently left open to hunting, and I'm not in favor of any of these developments because they're not going to really help anybody that I can see. And the Forest Service cabins, as they are now, well, the tourists and people are signed up for these things from the beginning of the season to the end, most of them. And so if a local guy wants to go hunting or something and the cabin's filled up, he's going to avoid the area. And if it's, I got a stiff, and there's a limited number of places I can get to. And these islands are all places I can get to, and I don't have to pay nothing. I want to pitch my tent. I can go anytime, and there's probably not going to be anybody there, but there's a cabin. I can expect it'll be full, and I'll have to avoid the area. So it's kind of nice just to leave them just the way they are. And it's first come, first served, and we got good hunting. Kind of nice to have it the way it is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tastes good hunting there?
Pretty good. Well, they're all these places, as long as they're not developed, they're good hunting. Yeah. You put cabins in and then it burns them out.
Okay. Do a fiscal note, right?
Guy Campbell still here?
Okay, Phil Holdsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Philip Holdsworth, and I'm speaking for the Alaska Miners Association. I think it, as was just recently pointed out by the previous witness, and I would like to just touch on that again.
Shelter Island, the southern tip here, which is outside of the red lines, is the state land, and it's they've sold lands down there, and there's occupation in that end. Up in here, in the gap between those two red areas, is a state selection also, which is in state ownership now. And it is sort of a recreational or a park system, and no lands sold up there. The
acreage that's been suggested, I kind of question, because it's only the uplands that become involved in this. The tidelands, outer, everything below mean high tide, is under state control now anyway, as long as you don't go out beyond the 3 mile limit. So there's no acreage involved in that. And I'd be interested in knowing what the actual figure is on those group of small islands. We were approached by DNR to see if there were any minerals or anything like that in those islands, and there are none whatsoever. So that's one issue that's no problem, possibility. The original grant of 400,000 acres in the National Forest, I don't believe that it speaks to just the one forest. I think it's the National Forest. It's both the Chugach and Tongass. So that's why, of course, there was mention of up there on the Kenai. So the 400,000 acres would apply to both areas. Over years past, when different parks were requested, the federal statute was very clear that these lands were to be selected for community expansion or community-oriented recreation. And when they started to select these lands all the way from the Canadian border on up for stopping, you know, these larger boats to pull into these areas, why, they had quite a battle with the Forest Service to accept those isolated areas. And if they did push the issue and decided the Forest Service would agree, they forced them to take lands, uplands, behind that, not just the water area and a little strip on the beach. And there was where we came into trouble with the mining industry, and that was that the areas that they picked was isolated areas, and a large amount of land behind it, and maybe in there a little bay where they pull in with their boats and could drop the hook, were usually the access to mineral land behind it. And so it posed some problems for us in those days, back years back. But that situation wouldn't occur here. This is going to, apparently, clearly is going to be used for not disposal of land, or it is community recreation area, because it's right in the community. So I really don't see any problem with that. I'd like to know myself, the questions that you've asked about how much acreage really has been selected under this provision, and then the actual amount of acreage in here. There are two islands in this group. One has a beacon for approaching the island, and they want to put one more on the battleship island, whatever they call it. And that's right off the end of
coming off the airport, and it's this little island right out here. If you go over the what do you call that?
Lena Point?
It's not Lena Point. It's the Mental Peninsula. Well, it's in the Mental Peninsula, but they have a name for that, and I forget what it is.
the low area with the cushions on both sides.
Right through the cut there?
Yeah.
Outside of the cut?
That's right.
Over the clear cut.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it's just the first island to come out over the bay on the north side. There's no problem, of course, with putting on another one of those beacons. It would be very helpful. And as long as it's not land that's going to be disposed of and occupied, why, there'd really be no problem with that. Those lands, of course, they've applied for those lands, selection of those lands, but those areas are still in Forest Service ownership up to this point. So that's the status of them actually at the moment.
Senator Lyson,
Chairman. Phil, I was wondering, does the Forest Service or the Feds, they put some type of a criteria or a priority on, obviously there are some lands like when you're speaking of which were on a selection list, but somewhere in the process, does the Forest Service or whoever handles that for the federal government make a decision on if there are competing the holders that they would pick themselves? If we say we have 20, or say we got 40,000 acres left to pick, and we've selected about 70,000 acres, and it's all in that file, how does the Forest Service handle that?
Well, actually, the Forest Service...
BLM, whoever handles this land disposal.
Well, land disposal is done by BLM, but it's approved by the Forest Service, of course. And the Forest Service does not... They don't actually create parks within the forest. They do have these isolated cabins, you know, which they have, and they have the fee to go out and use those. And so that they really are not involved. There was quite a battle with the Forest Service not wanting to accept those isolated areas. They didn't meet the criteria of the statute. But they finally did give up and allow some very isolated areas to be created. And as far as management by DNR is concerned, their plans on these kind of shore deals, the only thing they would do in providing a support is just anchor your deals that you put out to anchor up if you're traveling. I'm getting to the point where I can't remember.
They would oppose that or would have to okay it, or the Forest Service would have to get permission to put a buoy outside the state water?
The state would put it in. If they did create have an accepted park area, one of the isolated areas, which they had to have a lot of land on behind it. The only service they would provide would be they wouldn't put in any docking facilities or anything like that, or neither would they want to put any cabins on the uplands. But it was just in case they put these buoys out, that the boats, as they traveled out, they would have a place to pull the boat into the bay and hook up on the buoy.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lassen?
Say, for example, that it's been determined now that there's no minerals on those islands, and obviously they're not compatible or acceptable for logging. So it doesn't give the Forest Service a lot of choices on what to do with that land if we didn't select it. So the state still, I assume, has control of the waters within the bays and the tidelands all around those islands. So if the Forest Service just let the land sit there, nothing happened, would it be prudent for us to use that selection or that amount of acreage somewhere else and let this sort of manage itself? Because nothing's going to happen anyway, like the gentleman suggested, everything's going fine now, why stir things up? And what would happen then?
Well, there's always a possibility that the pressure would be put on the Forest Service to build their cabins. And that's one thing that there's a lot of objections to. The previous witness, for example, they don't want that to set up a Forest Service cabin and put it out for rental and so on. And the people that are using the island for fishing and hunting and that sort of thing, or hunting at least, would have to take second place.
Very rational.
It says right here, though, that they plan on doing that. Picking tables, maybe a cabin or two. Of course, Neil testified before this gentleman did, and I suspect that he's not going to get the money to do that with anyway. But the Forest Service always has their option to come in and use that recreation area by building cabins and renting them out, which would really serve people in this district or all over Southeastern as a recreation facility, not just the people who lived here.
I'd be interested in reaction by Forest Service on that. I'm sure they would not do this sort of thing because it's right in the community. It's the isolated areas that they put their cabins in.
So I guess the point being is that if we do nothing, nothing's going to change.
That brings us back to the whole question of what the commissioner wanted to do in terms of making the state's land selections. You know, if we spend our time legislatively, the department spends their time from the executive branch chasing individual selections, plans, parks, etc., then that's either more money we have to appropriate or less he could spend on the best possible state selections to fill out the statehood entitlement in the next 3 years. And my inclination on virtually all this legislation is we should be holding it off for a year or two so that we can concentrate on the selection process. That's kind of what...
I think that's what we need the Division of Lands here for, or the commissioner himself. I'd like to know whether this is already selected state land under that selection, or this is some separate selection, or it sounds to me it might be separate, but it's part of the land we will be receiving as a state under the Statehood Act. Part of the 120 million acres, or what?
It is, but it's also a part of the smaller allocation. But the question is it over-selected, or isn't it? Or there's a lot of other things.
Well, that brings up another question. Out of 120 million acres, we're only allowed to select 400,000 of the national forest, right?
Yes.
That's a maximum. So it has nothing to do with the total selection for land for saver purposes. Otherwise, it's like the whole forest, right?
Well, that's that 400,000 acres is out of the total.
Right.
Entitlement.
I guess I'm.
Thank you. Anyone further to testify on this? Now we'll close the hearing and we'll bring this bill up again. Get some answers. Questions. Okay, we'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 154. The sponsor had to go to another meeting, but we have some people from out of town, and we aren't. We're not on teleconference. Neil, though. All right.
I'm not sure. Is he in town?
All right. And Barbara Sherman, would like to come up.
I practice law in Fairbanks with Steele, Julie, Cook, and Sherry. And the reason I'm here today is that some of my clients are banks, lending institutions, and fiduciary institutions that have come to me to try to figure out what they can do and what they shouldn't be doing so that they don't run afoul of the strict liability provisions, both of federal and state law. So should I just go?
Go ahead.
I thought that the easiest way for me to address you is to pretend like you're my banking client and try to explain this law to you and how you can run afoul of it. So please feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions along the way. The strict liability provision of Alaska's law is found at AS 46.03.822. And it tracks the federal comprehensive CERCLA bill, if you will, in that it creates strict liability for certain classes of people. I'd like to, first of all, just sort of lay out in layman's terms the strict liability provisions, some of the defenses some of the defenses that are available under both federal and state law, but concentrating really on the state law, then address Senate Bill 154 and how it, we believe, answers at least some of the questions that have arisen, and then anticipate some questions if you folks have not already asked them of me. The nature of the liability that a bank or a trust company can get into in dealing with a borrower or in dealing with real property as collateral is strict. That is, you can be totally innocent. You may not know what the problem is. You may not know the property is contaminated. But by simply making a loan and dealing with a borrower who owns that property, or if you foreclose on it yourself, you become strictly liable. This is without cause. You may not have caused it. You may not have contributed to it. Liability is joint and several. That means that you, even though you may not have really had anything but this tangential connection with the property, you, being the deep pocket, will pay for the total price of the cleanup, of the remediation, of the damages to environmental resources and so forth. And then it's up to you to go look for somebody to try to reimburse you. Of course, there's no insurance for this kind of loss, and so it can be a tremendous liability to any lending institution, far in excess of what your original loan was or the value of the property. This liability is retroactive. The new law, which I think was House Bill 68 in that legislature, was passed shortly after the Exxon Valdez tragedy. It's retroactive. It goes back before May of 89 when it became effective, so that a bank, for example, that foreclosed earlier that year or 10 years before that, if it can now be proven that there was some release that occurred while the bank was an owner of property, you are strictly liable for all the damages. There's no statute of limitations, so that your liability incurred in the past or even today goes on in the future. You can be sued at any time in the future, 20 years down the road or whenever. There's nothing you can do to terminate that type of liability. The liability also can extend to officers of a liable party, to subsidiaries, to parent corporations, to lenders of borrowers that are held to be responsible, and even to lessors and lessees, if they are connected with property, even though they may not be the one that actually contaminates it, or whatever, if they are the lessor or lessee at the time of contamination, you're strictly liable. Once again, what amount can you be held liable to pay for? The law says damages to person or property, whether public or private, in addition to damage to natural resources, the costs of response, containment, remediation, and so forth. So you have not only the potential for liability to governmental authorities that might have to come in and remediate or respond, but also third-party damages, say to the neighbor next door, future owners of the property, and so forth. I think I've seen stories of some of the Superfund, the federal sites. The average cleanup costs there are in the several millions of dollars per site. This is not an insubstantial liability that Alaska's lending institutions could face. Who exactly is held responsible? What are the classes? How do you get yourself into this mess, in other words, as a lender or a trust company? Subpart A of the strict liability statute basically for lenders and fiduciaries has three classes, three titles or subtitles: the owner of the property, the operator of the property, or a person arranging for disposal or treatment or transport of a hazardous waste. Ownership. Now, you may not think that you're an owner of property, but you can be held to be an owner of property under some of the federal decisions that have come down under the federal law, which is very much similar to the state law. Operator liability is probably even more of a concern for lenders. You can be held to be an operator of the property if a court holds that you've had such control over your borrower as to be sort of the alter ego of the borrower. Even though you may not have really participated in the day-to-day decisions or operations at a certain location, just if you had enough power over your borrower, the courts will treat you as an alter ego and as the operator, and therefore you may have liability. Even though you never take title as an owner of property, you become liable as the operator of the property. The third category is if you arrange for disposal or treatment. This is if you go in and decide to take responsibility and you try to clean up a site. If you arrange for transport or disposal of a hazardous substance or waste, you're taking on additional liabilities that you would not have had as owner or operator. There are defenses that the legislature wrote into the statute. And I wish I could, Mr. Client, give you the exact parameters of what you can and can't do to stay within those exemptions. For example, in subpart B of section 822, the legislature wrote in that if the release was caused by an act of war, solely caused by an act of war, then you should not be held liable. If, on the other hand, it was caused solely by an act of God or by an act of a third party, you still have the duty of discovery and the duty to clean up. So this is unlike federal law. I call this this defense is really rather illusory because you're still going to have to discover it and clean it up. It's really not a defense at all, which is one reason why we would like to do away with that particular requirement. Probably more to the point is under the definitional section for owner and operator in section 826, subpart 8, subpart B of that, owner and operator. Subpart A tells you what an owner and operator is. Subpart B tries to state an exemption of or a person who is not to be held to be an owner and operator, and that says owner and operator do not include a person who, without participating in the management of a vessel or facility, holds indicia of ownership primarily to protect that person's security interest in the vessel or facility. Mr. Baker, I wish I could tell you that that is the answer to your problems. It isn't. Under federal decisions, most recently the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in a case called Fleet Factors, which went up on a petition for cert to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they would not accept cert. Under that decision, a lender who went in and foreclosed and just had the ability to manage, they just had the ability to manage the borrower. That was enough to take them out of this exemption. I guess if you took that decision to its logical conclusion, every time you make a loan, you have an ability to affect your borrower's decisions on how and when and so forth they're going to dispose of their hazardous wastes, or how they're going to address their environmental problems. So we don't have any Alaska decisions, but we do have a lot of federal decisions under identical language, and I have to tell you that I think your liability is great, and there's not a whole lot you can do to prevent it. How does this affect the lending institutions in the state? First of all, they look at a loan or an existing borrower or a defaulted borrower, and they come to a person like me and they say, now what are we supposed to do? How do we protect ourselves? How do we stay within the law and not get tagged with this tremendous liability for a cleanup that could far exceed the amount of the loan? Somebody like me has to tell them that take a look at your borrower. What kind of industry is that person in?